My name is Tyler. I'm one of the pastors here. Man, we're going to be in John chapter 1 this morning, which was just read for you, so you can begin turning there in your Bibles. If you don't have a Bible, no worries. We'll have the words up on the screen, okay? Well, we're in a vision series, like Pastor Jay said, called Imagine What God Can Do. And we want to be a church, right, that imagines what could happen when we start inviting people. And we become a church where people want to invite other people too. But sometimes, though, we forget why we're here. If I were to ask you, why are you here this morning? What would you say? It's so easy to have spiritual amnesia, right? To just forget why we're even in this building, why we're here. Right? I took a team to Northwest China back in 2006, a small team. We raised funds. We got our passports, got our shots, everything like that. And we literally went to the other side of the world, okay, to a remote place. And it took a team there, but somebody had on our team had a medical emergency on our six-week trip. They had what doctors call a perianal abscess. In other words, ouch. Ouch. Couldn't walk. He took an ambulance to the airport. I got on a plane with him. We flew all the way to Beijing and then flew from there to Hong Kong just to get good, adequate medical treatment. And so we were in Hong Kong for 12 days while he healed up. And then we flew back after having to renew our visas, flew back into China, went to Northwest China, and I just asked for an update. Man, we were gone. It felt like we were gone for a long time. What were you up to? Like, what happened while we were gone? And it turns out that two of the girls on the team literally spent almost every day shopping. Shopping. I was horrified. I was like, we literally raised thousands of dollars and went to this remote place that there were hardly any missionaries at, right? This one opportunity, right, for 6 weeks to share the gospel, to share love for Jesus, and they spent every day shopping, right? I was horrified, right? It's an example of how we can have spiritual amnesia, right? Go to the other side of the planet and forget why we're there. Totally forget why we're there. And the same thing can happen to us. The same thing can happen to us. We can be in this room this morning and totally forget why we're here. We can totally forget why we exist, right? That we're sons and daughters, right? But we forget that we are also called as missionaries, right? Called as witnesses. And that's what this morning is about, to wake us up, to have God's word awaken our eyes, to open our eyes and wonder, to see God and see people until we can be an inviting church, right? Rather than hoarding grace, that we can invite people into God's grace. And so that's our vision this morning, is for us to be a church filled with cultural insiders, not outsiders, to be friends, not solicitors, to be missionaries, not tourists, and to be inviters and not hoarders, okay? And so let's begin. Let's start with the first point, that we are a church that is aimed to be cultural insiders, not outsiders. Verse 14 says, of John chapter 1, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth." And that verse is Dr. Bomb that explodes. It has so many implications for us as a church, this doctrine of incarnation. We sing about it every Advent. Emmanuel, right? God with us. It has power and has many implications for us. It's still the most utterly profound and craziest of ideas that God himself came into this earth, isn't it? Man, just like Shakespeare wrote himself into one of his plays, God, as the author of all humanity, wrote himself into the story and came and dwelt among us. It's powerful. He put himself next to us. Now, because of fear and comfort in our lives, it's much, much easier to be on the outside than on the inside of culture. It's much easier to live on the outside, on the fringe, where it's safe and comfortable and we feel protected, rather than leaving our bubble and going into the culture, going upstream. So much easier, but that's not how Jesus lived on mission, is it? He left the comfort of heaven. He came to a very uncomfortable world, the world that he created, and was crucified within it. Right? He came to the uncomfortable. He went upstream into this culture. And the text says that he dwelt among us. He made his home here on earth. And that is how we as Christians are to live here in Benson and Omaha. Right, sociologist James Davison Hunter said something that really struck me about 10 years ago when I read this for the first time. He said, The main reason why Christian believers today have not had the influence in the culture to which they've aspired is not that they don't believe enough or try hard enough or care enough or think Christianly enough or have the right worldview, but rather because they have been absent from the arenas in which the greatest influence in our culture is exerted. Right? The desire to be pure from the world has entailed a disengagement and withdrawal from active presence in huge areas of social life. Do you hear what he's saying? He's saying that the gap that exists between us and inviting other people into God's story is not that we're not smart enough, because we are. It's not that we're not mature, because we are. Many of us are very mature Christians in the room. That's not it. He's saying the issue, the root issue, is one of proximity. We're not near the people that God's trying to reach. We're not near the people that God's trying to show his love to. And so what Hunter goes on to say is that we have created a subculture, where we have, in other words, have created parallel worlds that run parallel, these parallel universes that run in parallel to culture but never intersect the culture. That we've created systems, we've created Christian coffee shops, we've created Christian bookstores, we've created Christian sports leagues even, which aren't bad in and of themselves, but we've made these attempts to run parallel to the culture in a way that never allows us or pushes us to actually merge with culture and interact with culture. And that's the problem. But Jesus, right, Jesus modeled this mission. He modeled being physically close enough to touch us, right, emotionally close enough to care about us, and culturally close enough to find common ground with us. Jesus became like us, and he dwelt among us. He made our home his own home, right? That's how he modeled mission. And so, man, we don't, outside-in strategies, working from the outside in, those don't work because there's no trust, there's no friendship, there's no relationship, right? People have a hard time being changed from the outside in, right? Think about my fraternity years, and people on campus had a really hard time reaching out to the Greek community. Really had a hard time breaking into fraternity and sorority world, but God changed my life when I was in my fraternity, and he changed my life. He turned my life upside down, and I was, right then and there, after becoming a Christian, a cultural insider. But I was one of them. I identified with them. I knew the language. I knew what they were thinking. I knew everything that they wanted, I knew, and God used me as a cultural insider to start a Bible study within the house rather than from the outside. And people started coming to conferences, coming to church with me. People's lives began to be changed right from the inside out. And that's what Jesus did, and that's what Jesus modeled. And so let me just ask you this morning, right, to think about this question this week. Am I a cultural insider or a cultural outsider? Am I living on the fringe of culture, or am I continuing to try to work myself into the epicenter of culture, to be with people, to put my body next to someone? Because it's simple but profound, right? If we want to reach other people, we have to put our bodies next to someone and stay there, right? Imagine a church that doesn't hide in fear over here, just afraid of what's out there, and a church filled with the Spirit of God, filled with the Spirit of God, filled with courage to go upstream, right? To go into politics, right? To go into education, and to go into those places that no one else, that no other Christian wants to go to, right? And to work from the inside out, to see the gospel burst from within and change the culture, right? Because change happens, right, from the inside out, not the outside in, right? The second point is that we want to be a church that makes friends with people rather than soliciting, being gospel solicitors, okay? Lindsay and I have put a sign on our front door that says, "No soliciting." You think people respect that? No. No, I just had two Jehovah's Witnesses come to my door yesterday and saw the sign and still rang our doorbell and always wake the kids up. Had a nice chat with them. I was able to tell them all that we're doing here in Benson. But, man, we'll be eating dinner and just having this shalom, this peace as a family. And then the doorbell rings. Then the dog starts barking. And then the kids start running around. And it goes from, like, shalom, right, peace and wholeness, to, like, chaos, right? It's an intrusion into our lives, right? They feel like intruders intruding into our peace, right? They don't care about our dinner. our family dinner, they care about selling something to us. And that's harder. Sometimes Christians can come off to the culture around. That you don't know is valuable, right? We want to continue to do that as a church. But what I'm saying is, if we do that outside the context of love, and we do that outside the context of really desiring friendships with people to stay in their life, then it's just not very effective, right? To keep that as a primary strategy. In fact, the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association did a study once, and they found this striking conclusion, that 0.5, so half a percent to a percent, attribute coming to Christ to an evangelistic crusade, 1 to 2% to a special need, 2 to 3% to walking into a church, 5 to 6% to a pastor, 4 to 5% to a Sunday school, and 2 to 3% to some other church program. But, get this, 75 to 90% of Christians attribute their coming to Christ to the influence of a trusted friend or relative. And isn't that crazy? 75 to 90% of people say they came to Christ through a trusted friend or relative that cared about them. That didn't solicit them, but what came and was a part of their life, right, and stayed with them. Man, as you look at the rest of John chapter 1, if we were to continue reading until the end of the chapter, you'll see in verses 31 through 51, you'll see a pattern. You'll see how the gospel moved in the first century. Right, we see John the Baptist goes and invites his friends, Andrew and John. And then Andrew goes and invites Peter. And then Jesus invites Philip. And then Philip goes off and invites his friend Nathaniel. And then John, who was invited by the other John, goes and invites his brother James to all come and see who this Jesus is. And I think it's striking to see that the gospel was moving quickly through relational networks, through family networks, through networks of friends, where people were saying, hey, come, and they were coming to see Jesus because they trusted the person who was inviting them, because they were a friend and family member. And so that begs us to ask the question this morning, man, how many friends do we have in our life that don't yet believe what we believe? Right, if you scroll through your phone this morning, how many of your contacts in your phone are people that don't believe what you believe? Like, are we pressing in and building relationships with people that aren't like us, that don't look like us, that don't behave like us? And we're building that relationship because we desperately want them to know Jesus, right? And the gospel travels much more quickly through networks. And that's why it gets harder as you get older, right? When you're in college, I love college ministry because college students have tons of friends. They all have like 100 to 200 friends in classes and their fraternity and their organizations, right? Lots of friend networks, lots of invitation opportunities. But when you get older and you get kids, man, you get more introverted, and it takes work, right, to get out into the culture. And that's why things like joining a MOPS group or a neighborhood association or a biking club or an intramural team or going to the gym, right, those things matter. Those things matter to God. When you can do something that you love, like join a bike club or go to the gym and do something you love and build relationships and expand your relational network and have an infinite amount more of opportunities to invite people into God's story, and that is a huge win, right? This is so important in our day because now more than ever, we need to rely on relationships to make invitations. Because back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, you could get away with less relational strategies. Back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, people could share gospel tracts, hold evangelistic crusades, and they were very, very effective. Why? Because it was still a very religious culture. Most people, the great majority of people, grew up in church. So it was a matter of seeing these people who were on the verge of trusting Christ, trust Christ, right? It was these people that were familiar with religious language that had grown up in the church, and it was a matter of getting them to move from religion to a relationship with Jesus. And these evangelistic crusades and these tracts taught them about the difference between religion and a relationship. So it was very, very strategic. But now we live in a post-Christian culture where people are unfamiliar with terms like sin or who God is, right? Very, very unfamiliar, and they're farther and farther away from trusting Christ. So we can't no longer rely on those less relational strategies, but need to build friendships, real friendships with people, which takes time. But let me show you a diagram that I made to help illustrate this. So on one side, you have people who are resisting God, right? Resisting God, maybe they're scoffing at him, they're running the other way. And then you have the next group of people who are questioning. They're open but skeptical. Then you have people in the middle who are trusting Jesus. And then people who are growing in their faith. And then lastly, people who are going, right? They're going. They're actively making disciples, actively inviting people into God's story. And there's a spectrum here. And so it was easy at one point, right, to do strategies that reached people between the questioning and trusting group. It was easier to reach that group. But what I want to say today is that, man, we don't want to be a church that just reaches a small group of people that are on the verge of trusting Christ, but we want to be a church that reaches all people, that is safe for everyone on the spectrum to come and be a part of our family, to belong before they believe. Right? Jude 1:22 says, "Have mercy on those who doubt." It says, "Have mercy on those who doubt." Man, do people in our culture who are doubting or resisting God, have they been shown mercy and compassion and patience by other Christians and other churches, or they've received mercy? And God is calling us to be a church that gives mercy and is patient with people who are actively running from God, right? And in order to do that, I think we need to redefine the way we view success. Right, oftentimes we view success as the number of baptisms in a church or Sunday attendance, like numerical things like that. But what if we viewed success differently? Or what if we viewed success as befriending someone who doesn't believe what we believe? And yet championing that as, man, that matters. Or what if we valued somebody who didn't yet trust Christ, but somebody who moved from resisting God to now they begin questioning God? They start asking you questions about your faith and about Jesus. Man, would that be counted as a success? And we want to be a church that celebrates, affirms, and champions when anyone moves from a -7 to a -6. Or just one little step to be, yes, God's moving, the Spirit's moving in that relationship. Right? We don't want to discourage you to only have friends, right? Or encourage you to only have friends who are on the verge of trusting Christ, but we want to encourage you to be reaching all people on the spectrum, right? Because God cares about not some people, but all people. And then third, we want to be a church filled with missionaries, not tourists. Missionaries who lay down their roots somewhere rather than tourists who just kind of travel and make visits around town or make visits around the world and come back. Right? We want to lay down our roots. Right? Jesus didn't come as a tourist to the earth, but Jesus came and dwelt among us here. For 30 years, he just did life as a Jewish carpenter. Right, he laid down his roots here. Right, committing to a people long term is much more effective than short term visits or projects. Okay, I'm excited for all of you to continue to get to know Thomas, who gave an amazing call to worship this morning. I was getting excited. I was like, yes. And Thomas, you are such a blessing. It's so great. I'm so thankful that you came over with Forward and now are doing a life with us and leading us. Man, I love you so much, brother. And I can't wait for you to hear more of Thomas's story because it is amazing. Right, from birth until age 13, he grew up in orphanages in Brazil. And think about your life from 0 to 13. Right, I bet you can picture lots and lots of memories in school, at the swimming pool, playing with friends. And all of those memories for Thomas were in an orphanage. Like that was his context growing up, right? And so he told me that from in these orphanages where he church felt safe, he didn't feel protected, right? And these were orphanages that took them to church on Sundays, right? He remembers Christians coming and visiting, and he remembers churches coming and visiting, all which were very valuable, right? They came and they provided hugs, and they hung out with the kids for the day. Before leaving, they provided food and resources and support for them, which he desperately appreciates. And all of those visits mattered, right? All of those visits were helpful. But his life was turned upside down for real when he was 13 years old, right? And a couple from the U.S. adopted him, right? And they put him on a plane, right? They put him on a plane, and they flew him from Brazil all the way to rural America. And he grew up, and his family loved him. They were patient with him. They taught him the good news about Jesus, and they never stopped showing that love to him from 13 until the time he left. Right? This, and I say this story, and I want you to hear more of it sometime, but I share this by this morning to show, man, that the visits are good. The visits to orphanages by great Christians were good, but what really changed and rocked his world is when he was adopted. When someone took ownership of him to love him day and night. Yeah. To love him day and night and put a stake in the ground and say, hey, we're not going to leave you. Right? We're going to be here for you day and night. Man, what would it look like if our church didn't just make visits, just didn't use a shotgun approach, like going to visit this soup kitchen, going to visit this school, and just shotgun approach, like doing random acts of kindness. But what if we asked the Lord, hey, what people, what network, what neighborhood, what club, right? What group of people can I adopt? And just continue to show up there over and over again, to continue to show blessing for years, not just a few days. What would it be like for a church, right, to do that? Right? And by God's grace, that is already happening in our church. We have stories to share. Right? The Vanderveen apartment didn't just visit refugees, right? But they have adopted a whole apartment complex as their own, and they've moved in. Right? They've put down a stake there. Right, Diane Schmidt and Laura Dosen don't just visit single moms in their homes from time to time, but they've said, man, we want to adopt these single moms as our own, and we want to meet with them every single week to bless them. Right, the Jerry Knoble and Nancy Novotny don't just visit families who have special needs young adults, but they've adopted these families as their own, and they get together every Sunday morning to love and serve on these families. Right? Our City Light Arts Project team, which we heard up from Shannon this morning, and they don't just visit artists on Benenson First Fridays, don't just stop in and see their work, but have adopted artists. Right? We've set up space and a home over here for them to continue to come back to and show their art and be encouraged and empowered as artists. Right? You see? And visits are good, but adoption is much better when we adopt. So what would it look like if we didn't just visit Benson West Elementary? And to my knowledge, adopters have stepped foot in that elementary school yet. But what if we didn't just visit there, but adopted that school as our own? Or what if we didn't just visit Benson businesses and eat in the restaurants on the strip, but what if we adopted Benson leaders, business leaders, right? Went to the Benson Business Association and just laid a stake down and said, I'm going to hang out with these business leaders for the next few years and just love them and see how I can bless them. Right? Visits matter, but adoption is better. Lastly, we want to be inviters, not hoarders. Okay, let me explain. Have any of you ever seen the TV show Hoarders in here? How many of you have seen Hoarders? Oh, it's painful. It's painful to watch. As you see, all these people with all this stuff just filled to the brim of their apartments. And they don't look happy, do they? They look anxious, you know. And they're trying to get more and acquire more and hold on to what they have. And a lot of us have relatives that do the same thing. Right, all of us can say, "Oh, my grandma, my aunt, man, I got a hoarding problem." Right, and there's anxiety there. Right, when you get this show puts on display the symptoms and consequences of what happens to someone when you get overly consumed with acquiring more and holding on to what you got. Right, and sometimes we can do the exact same thing. Right, we can get overly consumed with God's gifts, like what He wants to give me. Where we can consume and hoard all these amazing Sunday morning worship experiences, or these conferences we go to, or our quiet times, and we can just accumulate and kind of have this tunnel vision and hold on to what we have and want more, and not realize that we're not sent here to be hoarders of God's grace, but to extend an invite for other people to experience God's grace, right? In verse 6 of John chapter 1, we read this about John the Baptist. It says, there was a man sent from God whose name was John, and he came as a witness to bear witness about the light that all may believe through him. So we see that his identity, John the Baptist, was not just being another son of God, right? But his mission was to be sent by God so that other people would believe in him, right? To bear witness simply means to show that something exists or is true. And that's what John the Baptist lived out until the day he was martyred. Right? His role was to point people, not to himself, but to point to Jesus. Right? The same thing is true of us. We don't exist for ourselves to point people to how good we are and how we're serving the neighborhood. We exist to point people to Jesus Christ. Right? He is the light. He is the life. That's what we read in verse 9, that Jesus is not just true, but he's the light of the world. Right? There's a lot of things that are true, but aren't good. But Jesus is both true and he is good. He is the light. He is the one who has covered our darkest deeds with his blood and forgiveness. He is the one, when we are confused about where to go in life, he is the one that was a light and a lamp into our feet, into our path, and he lit up a new hope, a new calling, a new future for us. Amen? And in the Jesus, that's why we want to point people to Jesus, because there's no power in and of ourselves. There's no power in and of City Light Benson. The power is all in Jesus. And we came to bear witness to Jesus. Right? If people don't have Jesus, right, they don't have a changed life. And that's why we want to live with our eyes wide open. As we sang about, again, open our eyes, Lord, to your wonder, and open our eyes to see not ourselves, but to see other people who need to be invited into the story. Right, on Friday night, on Benson First Friday, I used to make a visit here to our City Light Arts Project, and then I'd go down the strip and visit some other galleries and just say hellos to friends that I'm trying to cultivate friendships with. And I got to the other side of Benson to the pet shop, and there is this artist there named Anthony, and he had these very strange pieces. They were black canvases, and they had ghosts on them that were made of wax. It was pretty cool because it looked 3D, because there was like candle wax. And just listening and learning to what the pieces represented, and found out that he had had a broken relationship that turned sour and broke up. And so these paintings were kind of following that whole breakup with the person, his girlfriend. And he said this. He said, "I found that we," meaning him and his girlfriend, "existed as a perverted sense of each other's expectations." Right? Artists are deep, right? It's like, oh, man, wow. What he's saying is that they weren't really in love with each other. They weren't really connected to each other as they existed. They were trying to relate to the person that they wanted that person to be, right? There's missed expectations. They were in love with not each other, but each other's expectations. That's what they were wanting. So he created these paintings with ghosts on them to represent that we are a little bit like those ghosts, that we are we lack definition, we lack substance, and we're continually roaming around, right, searching for a little bit of the divine, as he, in his words. We're searching for divine substance. We're searching for fulfillment, but never finding it. So we're like ghosts that just are always roaming around looking, right? So what I love about artists is that they put on display what's really going on in their heart. It would be great if all of us were artists and could just put on canvases what's really going on the inside. And though that's not true, though we're not all artists and can do that, the point is that all of us are like Anthony, right? All of us have stories. All of us are carrying around suitcases, these spiritual suitcases filled with longings, filled with brokenness, filled with bad experiences, filled with hurt, and we're all carrying these around, and we all have this story. And here's the big idea, is that Jesus is the author of their life. Jesus is the fulfillment of their story. All the roads lead to a dead end, but in Jesus, Anthony can find fulfillment. He is the one who is the perfecter of their faith. And we, as the church, get to be the ones that meet people, befriend them, listen to their story, understand Jesus and their hurts, and point them and bear witness to Jesus who can change their entire life. Jesus who can change their story forever. And we get the privilege of extending that invitation if we live with eyes wide open. Amen? Man. But here's the deal, right? Here's the deal. Some will accept the invitation and others will not. Some will say yes and some will say no. In Luke chapter 14, and I'll end with this. In Luke chapter 14, Jesus shared a parable about a great banquet. And the man who prepared the banquet sent out invites, right, to all his prestigious buddies, all of his popular buddies. And every single one of them said no. They all had an excuse. They said, I've had a good life. I have a good life. I don't need God right now. Right, I've been burned by the church and don't want to try that thing again. Or life is just really busy right now. I got sports leagues on Sunday. I got this and this and this. And so I don't have time right now to pursue God or come to church with you. Messenger, right? Every single one of them had excuses, and this is what the man said. He said, okay, to his messenger. He said, I want you to go out, invite the poor, invite the crippled, invite the blind, invite the lame. In other words, go out and invite everyone who isn't popular by cultural standards, those who are overlooked by the culture, the unlikely, and give them an invitation to come to the banquet feast of the Lord. And every one of those people said, yes. Right? I love that we get to see God's heart in this. That God's heart is not for some people. Right? God's eyes are not just on the people who Hollywood is looking at or mingles with, but God's love extends to every single person, the unlikely, the messy, the broken, just like you and me. And so I would plead with you as one whose life has been changed and turned upside down by Jesus, right? Who has a dark past and dark deeds and who Jesus as a light has covered those things and washed those things, has given me a new hope, a new calling. I would beg you and urge you not to have an excuse. I'm talking to the people in the parable. Not to have an excuse. I'm going to put God off right now. I'm not going to try this. Right, I still have a lot of questions. Maybe a couple of years from now, I'll sort of move towards Jesus. But what if you just saw that the invitation was on the table today? And to not see Jesus as some sort of intrusion into your life, but see that he's inviting you into a banquet, into a feast filled with good food, with well-aged wine. But that's what we'll be doing when Jesus comes back to get us. We'll be sitting at a banquet table, dining with one another. Right, so don't miss what God is inviting you into today. He's inviting you to be a part of his feast, new life, new friends, new family. And so would you receive that invitation and say yes to Jesus today?